Today's shiur is Masechta Baba Metzia, Daf Tez Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Tez Vav Amud Beis, 13 lines from the bottom. We begin today's shiur with Rava summarizing some of the Halach Lamaisa based on different subjects that we've learned over the last number of Dafim. Amar Rava Hilchasa, Yesh Lemas, V'yesh LeShvach. If somebody buys a stolen piece of property from someone else, when that, and then he puts the purchaser puts improvements into the field, and then when the field is repossessed by the true owner of the field, he has recourse, the buyer has recourse to the seller who is the gazlin for the money, yesh lemas, for the money that he paid for this piece of property, yesh leshvach, and he also is entitled to get compensated for the improvements that he made in this piece of property. Even when the buyer bought the property from the seller, they did not stipulate explicitly with each other that he would have those rights. Still, he's compensated for the money he spent and for the improvements he invested. Another psak, Hikabash and Shaloi, what we discussed in the previous year, if somebody bought a piece of property, and when he bought the property, he realized that this property did not belong to the seller, he's a gazlan, for Lachoi, he bought it anyway, Mas Yeshloi, when the property, if and when the property is taken away from him, he is entitled to get compensated for the money that he spent. Ostensibly, this is following the opinion of Rav, that Rav says that the money that such a buyer gave the seller was a bekadim, which he's entitled to get back. However, Shvach, such a buyer who put improvements into the field, Einloi, he's not entitled to get back the improvements he put into the field. And another psak that Rav teaches us is a chrayis, if the clause in the shtar that writes that when one sells something, he's responsible to pay if the property is taken away from him, taken away from the buyer. If that clause is omitted from the document, we assume Tayyar Seiferhu, it was a mistake on the part of the Seifer who omitted it. And the halacha is Bein Bishtar Hava, Bein Bishtar Mekach Memkar, both Bishtar Hava and Bishtar Mekach Memkar, the halacha is that this missing clause is viewed as a missing clause, not as deliberately omitted. The Rama quotes a Tshuvas HaRashba that says that if somebody bought a piece of property two times, so the buyer, if he says that he paid a second time by mistake, that really he paid once and he shouldn't have paid a second time, the halacha is that the seller has to give him back his money. But if he says that it wasn't a mistake, we assume, says the Rashba, as the Rama quotes him, that it was given as a matana. As the Shach, that our Gemara has Rava just paskened like Rav in the second psak that Rava issued in today's shir, and that the halach is that it's viewed money that's given knowing that it wasn't money that I supposed to pay is viewed as a pikadin, not as a matana. So how does the Rama and the Rashba paskin against our Gemara? So the stipler says that pshat and our Gemara, we learned in our Gemara that when Rava said hikabash ene shaloi v'lochai, so we assumed that Rava was paskin like Rav, and it was the reason why the buyer is entitled to get his money back is because, as Rav taught us in the previous year, it should be considered a pikadon. Says the stipler, that is not the reasoning behind Rav's psak. Rather, the reasoning behind Rav's psak is based on the concept of achrayus ta'a soifer, that when somebody buys something for somebody else and he gives money, there's always an assumption that there's an acceptance on the part of the seller that he will compensate the buyer for the money that he gave him. And only that's why Mas Yeshloi, not because we automatically assume it's Pekadon. For on the contrary, as we explained in the previous year, when somebody gives money that he shouldn't have, we assume rather that it's a Matana, not a Pekadon. Says the Gemara, ask the Gemara. Bamine Shmuel Rav. Shmuel posed the following question. Chaz v'loch v'balam ha-rishoinim mahu. Which means as follows. Somebody stole a piece of property and sold it to someone else. Now this seller, the Gazlan, goes and buys the piece of property that he sold, that he stole and sold, from the true owner. And the Gemara's question is, Mahu, how do we view this sale, this purchase? Do we say that the purpose of the purchase was, as we will explain in the Gemara in a moment, in order that since he sold him something that was stolen, and the buyer is about to easily lose that piece of property, he wants to validate the sale, and by buying the piece of property, now it's his, and it can remain by the purchaser? Or is that not his goal? There's a machlokes rishonim regarding what situation is the Gemara referring. Certainly in a situation where the purchaser was not aware that he was buying a stolen piece of property, and the seller, the Gazlan, wants to make right what he did, is the question of the Gemara. But some Rishonim say that even in a situation where the buyer was aware that it was a stolen piece of property, so there we could say, as we learned in the previous year, Rav and Shmuel's opinions, the Rav says we could say that the buyer gave the money as a Bikadin, Shmuel said the buyer gave the money as a Matana. There perhaps, say the Rishonim, certainly if the seller, the Gazlan, turns around and now really buys the piece of property, his intent is certainly not to give it to have the purchaser receive it. That's one approach. Others say that even in that case, where the purchaser was aware that it was a stolen piece of property, and he paid for it anyway, when the seller ultimately buys it, we can maybe think, as the Gemara explains, that his intent in buying it, even though the buyer knew that he was buying a stolen piece of property, was to do right with his buyer. And in fact, they want to suggest that that's why this Gemara immediately follows the previous piece of Gemara, which was referring to a situation where the buyer knew that he was buying a stolen piece of property, to say that the question and the sugya we're going to learn now even refers to such a situation. So says the Gemara, Bominei Shmu Miraf, Chaz V'lokman Ba'alam HaRishonim. If the seller, the Gazel, ultimately buys it from the true owners, Mahu, how do we look at it? Amalei, Mamachalei Rishon L'Sheni, when the seller, the Gazel, sold it to the purchaser, he sold it to him with the intent of Kol Schush Atav L'Yodai, anything that will ultimately become his, the purchaser should buy, and now it truly becomes the buyer's. My Tama. Why? So all the Rishonim obviously ask a question. The Gemara just gave us the reason. Ma'amachalai l'rishin l'sheni, kos chushatav l'yadoi. So why is the Gemara asking my Tama? We gave a reason. So I saw a number of answers to this question. One is, as we will get deeper into our sugya be'ezer Hashem, we're going to see that this concept of Ma Mochle Rishon Hasheni Kos Chush Shetov LeYadoi, that we consider it to become the property of the purchaser, is not the situation in all cases, as the Gemara will give us the exceptions. And therefore the Gemara wants to give us the reason so we should know when to apply this psak and when not to apply this psak. Another explanation that I saw the Rishonim suggest is that the Gemara is saying, Ma'amochal Rishon L'Sheni, what did this seller, the Gazlan, sell? Any rights that he ultimately will have. As we will continue learning in today's shir, we know that Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shlob Oilam. A person doesn't have the ability to sell something that doesn't yet have. So how could a person sell something when he doesn't yet have it? And yet a third pshat that I saw, and what the Gemara's question is my Tama, is we could, that the Gemara is asking that just like we could say that the purpose of the seller, of the Goslin buying this, was that he should, that the purchaser should be able to hold on to it, we could maybe say just the opposite. And the Gemara's question is, what forces us, or what makes us say that ma mochle l'rishin l'sheni kos chushetav l'yodai? Says the Gemara, mazut ramah, nichle delay nikrei gazlin. The seller doesn't want to have the name of a gazlin, and that's why he buys the property in order that his purchaser should be able to hold on to it. Rav Ashi Omer, nichle delikim b'menosei. He wants that the sale that he made should remain a valid sale. And the way he makes sure that it remains a valid sale is by ultimately buying the property, and like that it will remain by the purchaser. There's a very fundamental machloikus rishonim, which is a key point, which will be relevant to a number of issues that come up as we learn the shir. How do we view what happens here? Some rishonim say that when the seller, the gazlin, buys this piece of property from the true owner, it automatically becomes his buyer's piece of property. Other rishonim suggest that it works in a two-step approach. First, the seller, the gazlin, buys the property from the true owner, and he becomes the owner, and then the next step is that it goes on to the purchaser. And we'll see the nafkamina between these two approaches. But first, ask the Gemara, my benayu. The Gemara gave us two explanations why it should become the purchaser's lichle deloy nikri gazlona, or nichle deloy kebem nasei. Ask the Gemara, what's the nafkamina between these two pshatim? Answers the Gemara, ik benayu de mesle kayach. Would a purchaser passed away? And Rashi explains that the purchaser died after the buyer, after the seller, the gazlin, bought the property. Tysus disagrees. Tysus says that if he was alive at the moment that the gazlin bought it, and it might automatically becomes his, and therefore it makes no difference what happens to him afterwards. L'chayra, what is the machloikis of Rashi and Tysus? It goes back to what we said. According to Rashi, it's a two-step approach. So first becomes the gazlin's, and then if the buyer dies, it never will see, the Gemara wants to suggest, becomes his under certain circumstances. Whereas Tysus says, if the buyer were alive, it would become automatically his the moment the gazlin bought it. And therefore Tysus explains the Gemara that the buyer passed away or was very sick when the seller, the gazlin, bought this piece of property. It says Gemara, ik benai de mislokeach, the lokeach died. Man da amen nichalei deloy likri gazlona, that the seller, the gazlin, went through this transaction in order to avoid having this name of a gazlin. Hamislei, here his buyer died, so he's not worried about having a bad reputation with the lokeach. He's no longer alive. However, man da amma nichalei de lekem mikum nasek, he wants the transaction he did should remain valid. Bahad b'nei nam nichalei de lekem mikum nasek, he wants the same should be with the children of the buyer. Ask the Gemara, what's the difference? If this person is worried about his reputation, soif, karle b'nei lekeach gazlona. So he should be worried that the children, the yarshim of the purchaser, will call him a gazlan, if that's his concern. So why should this be the nafkamina? Says the Gemara, the nafkamina is the mis gazlan. If the gazlan passed away, man da amma nichlei l'inish d'loy l'kroi gazlan, that a person doesn't want to be called a gazlan. This person, the gazlan, died, hamislei, so he doesn't care about that reputation. However, l'mandama, according to the pshat, the nichalei the lekem b'mnosei, he wants that the deal he did should remain valid. He, hachanami afagav demis, he, even though he passed away, nichalei the lekem b'mnosei, he wants that the transactions he did should remain valid. Ask the Gemara again, Saif, if he's worried about his reputation, he's not only worried about his reputation that he shouldn't be called a gazlin when he's alive, he doesn't want to be called a gazlin even after he passes away too. Karalei b'nei b'nei gazlona, because they'll call his children, who are now the children of the one who was the gazlin who sold his property, the children of a gazlin, and that's not what he wants. Elik Menaya, the nafkamina is in a situation, the Yor B'matana. With this, Gazlan gave it away as a gift. Manda Omar, according to the one that says that he wants Nichalei Deleikim Bim Nosei, that he wants whatever transaction he enters to should remain valid. So that applies even by Matana. Matana Nami Nichalei Deleikim Bim Nosei. He wants whatever transaction he entered should remain valid, even though he didn't get any money for it. However, he doesn't want to be called a gazlan, that he sold a piece of property, took money that he didn't deserve. Now, he didn't steal anything from the one that got the property. He didn't sell it to him. He gave it to him. That would be the nafkamina. Now the Gemara continues, as I said earlier, qualifying this rule. Qualifying the rule that says that even though if somebody was a gazlan and sold a piece of property and then ultimately buys that piece of property, the halacha is that he has bought it in order that the purchaser from him should be able to keep it. There are exceptions to that rule. Zavna, if the ganef sold the property, now that he bought it legitimately, he sold it to someone else. And here we have machlokes rishonim. At what point did he sell it to someone else? Some rishonim suggest that he had to sell it prior to actually buying it. And other rishonim say he didn't sell it before he bought it. He sold it after he bought it. Why? What is the basis of this machlokes? Again, it goes back to the point that we discussed earlier. If we say that when the gazlan buys it, it becomes automatically his buyer's, so the fact that he sold it to someone else makes no difference. It already became the buyer's. So therefore, those Rishonim have to suggest that he sold the property to another individual before he bought it. However, the other Rishonim, who suggest that it works with a two-step approach, the first the gazlan buys it, and then only afterwards he turns it over to his buyer. So here, he could have sold it after he bought it from the true owner, before he turned it over to the first buyer. Or arsa, or if he gave it over as a Yerusha to one of his children, or Yarva b'matana, or he gave it away as a gift. And again, it'll be a shaila at what point he gave it away, the shaila that we just discussed, prior or after the actual purchase from the real owner. Here we see that the reason the gazlan bought the property was lav lo'ot mekam lo'keyach kabayi. His goal was not to help validate the original transaction, and therefore we don't say that it goes to the original purchaser. Nafla Yerusha. What happened here was that the gazlan, who had stolen this piece of property, had stolen it, now gets it and sold it, now gets this piece of property as a Yerusha. We say Yerusha b'melahi, a Yerusha happens by itself. V'lav iu katar basra, he didn't do anything to get this piece of property, and therefore we certainly can't assume that he tried to get this piece of property in order that the purchaser should be able to keep it. He didn't try to get the piece of property; it came to him as a Yerusha. Gavi iu b'chayva. Now the Gemara talks about a different situation where the person who the gazlan had stolen the piece of property from was a person who owed him money. And now he went, first stole the property, sold the property, and now is trying, collects this piece of property for the debt that's owed to him. And the question is, will it become the purchaser's or not? So says the Gemara Chazina, we have to analyze the situation. E isle arach rita, if the owner had other property, v'omar, and the gazlan said, "Hi, Beina, I specifically want this piece of property." It's obvious the why did he specifically seek out this piece of property. His goal was that the lokeach should be able to keep the property. However, v'iloi, if the person who he stole from had no other property, so this was the only property he was able to receive to satisfy the debt, Susie the buyer Freud, he just wants to get his money, and we don't say that he was doing this in order to be able to help the purchaser keep the property. The Rishayim debate, what would be if there are other explanations we could give for why the Gazlan sought out this piece of property. For example, let's say this piece of property is near other pieces of property that he owns. So some Rishonim say, so then again we say that the reason he sought out this piece of property is because of that reason, and not because he wants the purchaser necessarily to have it. Other Rishonim suggest, however, since the Gemara doesn't give those exceptions, only the exceptions that the Gemara gives are exceptions to the rule that we say that the Gazlan's goal was to give it to the to his purchaser. Otherwise, when he called anything else, we always say that was his goal. Continues the Gemara. Yavanale b'matana. What would be the halacha if the Gazlan received now this piece of property from the true owner as a gift? Does it become his purchaser's or not? Says the Gemara, Pligibar of Achav Ravina. There's a machloikis amiron. Charam a matana kirusha. We view a matana just like a Yerusha. And we said a couple of moments ago, that if he received it as a Yerusha, then it doesn't become his purchaser's, because as the Gemara said, Yerusha memeil kasa. V'char ama matana kamecha. That if the Gazlan received this piece of property as a matana, we view it as a mecher. Why? The elav b'tarf arz kamei. If not that the Gazlan had done something nice to the true owner, lo yavi yavlei matana. People just don't give gifts for no good of reason. It must have been, rather, the Gazlan went out of his way to be nice and to find favor in the eyes of the owner, in order that that's how he'll be able to get the property to remain with the purchaser. This question of do we look at a matana kamecha or not, I saw has very interesting impact on a Shaila and Hilchos Shabbos. As we know, on Shabbos, Mekech u'memkar, doing business is asur. And the question that comes up is, one allowed to give a gift on Shabbos? Is a gift considered, is matana considered kemecher? Question comes up, and one specifically lives in a neighborhood where there's an Erev, and he's going to a bar mitzvah on Shabbos, he wants to give svarim to the bar mitzvah bacher. Can he take those svarim and give the gift on Shabbos? Do we say it's considered like mekech u'memkar, which is asur, or not? So the Masham says the Al Gemara is proof that the Gemara says mecher matanas kemecher, and it's usher both for the person giving the gift and for the person that's receiving the gift to give a gift and receive a gift on Shabbos. So the Gemara said, that's how we began essentially our Shia today, that if the Gazlan buys the property, we say that the goal of him buying the property was an order that the buyer, the person who bought it from him, should be able to keep it. At Amos Nichalei, the Lekim B'Menasei, and in fact, Tosfos points out, the fact that the Gemara now only speaks about Lekim B'Menasei, not because of the reason Shloi Nikra Gazlonasa, it's a proof that the Pshat of this Psak is because of Lekim B'Menasei, not because he should call the Gazlan. But how long do we say that that is what's the thought, the thinking of the Gazlan? If he tried to get this property back before this case was taken to Beis Din, we say that his goal was to help the buyer keep the property. He extends it. Because even after Beis Din paskens that the property should be taken away, there's an extension of time of 90 days where we give to see if he'll pay or not. So the time till these 90 days, do we say that the Gazlan bought it in order that his purchaser should be able to keep it? Rapop extends it a little even more. Ad maskin yemeich rasta, because there are after the creditor identifies such property, we begin the 30-day auction process. And if he bought it before the auction, the auctioning begins, again we say he bought it in order that it should go to the purchaser. Maskula Ram Bachama Michti. We have a fundamental question. Hai lo keach b'mai kana lahai ara. The original person who bought this property, when he bought it from the Gazlan did not own this property. And when the shtar was written by shtar, when this bill of sale was written, hashtar chas b'almuhu, it's a meaningless document because the seller, the gazlan, did not own the piece of property. So how can we validate the sale? Amle Rava, Teba Maminoi. We'll have to explain that it's referring to a situation where the purchaser relied on the seller, on the gazlan. But who hano, the lekamale midi, because the satisfaction that the ganef receives, that the purchaser trusts him and doesn't accuse him that he stole the field, because somachalai, he relies on the gazlan, tarchamaisalai, causes the gazlan to ultimately try to get this piece of property on behalf of the purchaser, and gomra makumnalai, and that's what the kinyan is all about. The rishonim debate, how to understand this gemara. Some rishonim explain that we're referring to a situation where the purchaser explicitly said to the seller, the gazlan, I trust you. And those words of saying that I trust you causes him to have confidence and to have a kinyan. Others say that it doesn't mean that he specifically said baminoi. In any situation, that is the case, that because he enters into a deal and he trusts him, that's what makes the kinyan. Master Rosh Hashanah asked Rosh Hashanah, if this is true, that you could sell what you don't have. We learned in a brisa, if somebody says, Mash irish me abba machaloch, if somebody says, what I'm going to yashu for my father, I'm selling to you, Mash tell him it's dusty, what I will fish today, the fish that come into my net, machaloch, is the alochaloyam a klom, you can't sell something you don't have. Continues the brisa, however, if he said, Mash irish me abba hayoyim, Machaloch. Mashatal mitzvot say hayoy machaloch dvar kayamim, and the Gemara will soon explain why is there a difference between the Reish and the Seifa. But we still have a question. Here we see that if you say that if you can't sell something you don't have, Amra machama ha gavra vati yufta. We have a great person, Rav Sheshes, who asked Gvaldig Kasha, how could somebody sell just because maminoi something that he doesn't own? Amar Rava, comments Rava, Gavra Chazina, I indeed see a great person, Rav Sheshes. However, Vatayufta like Chazina, the question's not a question, because Hacha Samchadati, in our Gemara, the purchaser is relying on the Gazlan, and therefore we have a Kenyan, Vahachalai Samchadati. In the case that the Brisa just quotes, there isn't that type of reliance, and therefore there is no Kenyan. Hacha Samchadati, in the case of our Gemara, he relies, the purchaser relies, the ozel, taruch, umaisalei, that the gazlan will go and do whatever it takes to validate the sale, keicha de loisagri gazlan. Hoch, in our case, loisam chedaitim. Says the Gemara, shachul kamed rabbi barav zavda, this question was asked to rabbi barav zavda, omle, zu ein tzrich lufnim. And there are two ways the Rashi explains this line. One way of explaining is, there's no point of taking this question into the yeshiva, because there's nobody in the yeshiva qualified to answer this question. Another pshat Rashi says, is just the opposite. There is no need to take this question into the yeshiva, because anybody can answer this question. Amar Rava, Rava said, Zutzarech lefnai lefnai lefnim. It should be taken into the yeshiva, and it should be taken to the front of the Beis Medrash, where the big Talmidei Chachomim sit, and they'll be able to answer, as we have been learning. Hacha, in our case, Samchadaite, the purchaser relies that the gazlan will do whatever it takes to make sure that the sale, the transaction remains valid, and therefore we have a valid kinyan. Hacha lo Samchadaite, and we don't have a valid kinyan. Similarly, says the Gemara, have uvda b'pumbadisa, v'yisvein, the similar question was asked, amulah Rabbi Yosef, zu ene tzirich lefnim, v'amulah baya, tzirich lefnai lefnim, hacha samchadate, hacha loy samchadate. However, Rabbi Chanan Vassman makes a very important point. He says, the question Rabbi Chanan is coming to address is a fundamental question, which we're going to discuss more on the base. We've learned so many times that ain other makna davar shelo ba'olam. You can't sell something that doesn't exist. Yet our Gemara just taught us a new concept, that a sum chedate If the purchaser relies on the seller, then the seller could sell something he doesn't own, and the kinyan is considered a valid kinyan. How do we reconcile this opinion with everything we've always learned about Ein Adam Makne Dovah Shel Bal Olam? Says Rabbi Chanan, there are two separate issues. There's a concept of Ein Adam Makne Dovah Shel Bal Olam. Something that doesn't yet exist cannot be sold. And that's all that remains. Our Gemara is not referring to something that doesn't exist. Our Gemara is referring to something she'ein b'rishusoy. The right now, the ganav, the gazlan who's selling this property doesn't own the property, but the property certainly exists. And the Gemara is distinguishing between something ein b'rishusoy versus something shlabal la'olam. Ask the Gemara, umayishna reisha, umayishna seifa. Why in the reisha, when the person said mash irish me'aba machalach, mashatal mitzudasi machalach, we say that the sale is not valid, whereas if he said hayoim, it is considered a valid sale. What's the difference? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, seifa, in the seifa it's referring to a situation, umash irish me'aba hayoim, mishim kvar aviv. It's referring to a situation that the father is very sick, and he's about to die, and they don't have the funds available to pay for the takrichim, for the levaya. There, Chazal said that somebody could sell even these items that don't yet exist. The Ritva says that once Chazal made this takana, Chazal said not only can you sell for the burial needs, but he could sell for other needs that his father may have. The Ramban, however, disagrees and says you could only sell for burial needs, but he agrees, says the Ramban, that it's difficult to estimate and sell exactly the amount necessary for burial needs, and therefore you could sell a little extra. Furthermore, says the Ramban, that if one could only find buyers who are interested in large quantities of merchandise, he may offer any amount necessary to complete the sale, even if it results in selling much more than is necessary for tzorchei kvura. Similarly, the situation of mashal tzal tzedase hayoyim is referring to a situation mishum kedei chayiv, where the seller doesn't have anything to live on, and again, he's selling it. So Chazal made a special takana that he could sell even these items that don't exist. The Ravya, again, is lenient, and he says that once Chazal were makel and allowed this poor person to sell, he could sell as much as he wishes, even more than is necessary just for basic food that he needs. The Rosh cites, however, the opinion of Haigoin, who says that only he could sell as much what he needs for that day's sustenance. If he has enough for that day, then we don't have the special dispensation. The Ramban and Rif, who again seem to follow the opinion of the Rosh, that he could only sell for that day, say that he could sell more than just that day. He could sell for a couple of days, but he can't sell for the next month or the next year. The Mefarshim in Chumash ask that when Yaakov bought the Bechayra from Esav, how could have he bought the Bechayra? The Bechayra was a Davish Shalom B'loilam. Because what does the Bechayra represent? It either represents that you'll get a double portion of the Yerusha, but that is only applicable when there's somebody who died, or represents in those times the Avodah of the Bechayrus. But when Yaakov bought the Bechayrus from Esav, they weren't dividing the Yerusha, and we didn't have a base of Migdash, a Mishkan, to do the Bechayra. So how could Yaakov buy the Bechayra, which was a Davish Shlabal Olam? The Rivash, an answer to that question, says that this was before Matan Torah, and before Matan Torah there was no rule yet of Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shelo B'Olam. The Rosh says that even though the halacha is that Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shelo B'Olam, but if it's done with a Shavua, then the halacha is Adam Makna Dovah Shelo B'Olam. The Orach Chaim, however, says that we just learned in our Gemara that if the sale is being done because the person needs food, then the sale could take place even on Dovah Shelo B'Olam. Esav said that he needed the food, the Nazir Adoshim, to basically sustain himself. If it's being done to basically sustain himself, the Gemara says, then the sale is valid even on a Dovah Shelo B'Olam. Amar Funa Maraf, if somebody says to somebody else, Sadish Ani Lekeach, the field that I'm going to buy, Le'ik Shechena Knuy L'cha Mi'achshav, when I buy it should be yours from now, the loch is, Kana, the sale is a valid sale. Amar Rava, says Rava, Mestava Milsa the Rav, Rav Sak seems to be correct, Besodestam. When I say I'm going to buy a field, and the field that I'm buying should be yours, Av Besodazu, if I sell you a specific field, I'm going to sell you this specific field, which I don't yet have, Loi, then the sale is not a valid sale. Because me yeim with the Masbin Lenloi, if I say I'm going to sell you a field, so it makes sense that I'm going to be able to sell you a field ultimately. But if I say that I'm selling you a specific field, who says that I'm going to be able to get my hands on that field? However, says the Gemara Velikim, I can make a shvur that Amar Rav field besadazer. The Rav said his din even when he said this specific field. Ask the Gemara, Michti, Rav command Amar Lishmatzi. According to whose opinion did Rav say his psak? He said it according to Rameya. Domer Adam Makna Dovah Shelo B'Olam. The Tanya, as we learned, Haimel Ishif, somebody says to a woman, Hiskachli, Lachish as Gair, Lachish as Gairi, that the Kedushin should be valid after I become a Jew, after you become a Jew, Lachish Tashtachri, right now he's at Eved, he says, after I become a free man, Lachish Tashtachri, after you become free, Lachish Mispalech, after your husband passes away, or Lachish Yachlis Leivamech, because we know a Shemeris Yovim cannot be Makabal Kedushin, Lachish Thomas Achoisech, a man married to a woman cannot marry his sister unless his wife dies, Enim Kedushis. Because it's a Dovah Shelo B'Olam. Remeya Omer Mekudeshes, that the Kedushin is a valid Kedushin. Now, V'isha, he's speaking to a specific woman. V'isha Kesedet Zadamya. This woman is like a specific field. And yet, on Remeya Mekudeshes, the Loch is that it's Mekudeshes. Omishmu, Hamaiti Shtar Kno B'Shok. If somebody finds a shtar akna, and as we discussed earlier, the definition of a shtar akna is that the loiva obligated himself to the malva that he will pay what it says in the shtar, no matter what, and the shtar becomes valid from the day the shtar is written. Again, we had a machloikas rishonim, Rashi, and Rabbeinu Chananel. If the halacha is that a shtar akna is only valid if ultimately there was a halva, the Rabbeinu Chananel's opinion, or Rashi's opinion is we don't even have to have ultimately a halva. So a mitzvah shtar akna b'shak yachsel lebalim. He can return it to the malva. Dimishim the kasa lovas v'loy lava. If the concern is that perhaps they never ended up having a halva, hashavet nafshei. Regarding here makes no difference, because as we just explained, the definition of a shtar akna is that even if he never borrowed the money, he has to pay it. V'mishem peron, if the concern is that perhaps the loiva already paid, lochashin leperon, we're not concerned that might have happened. Dim isa de pare, if the loiva had indeed paid up the chayv, mikrav akarolei, the shtar would have been ripped. How was the shtar still found intact? Amar Rav Nachman, Abba min Safra Dayana Dema Shmuel Hava. My father was a cipher in the Besdin of Shmuel. V'chavina k'bashita k'basheva, and I was 6 or 7 years old. For that chrinan, I recall dava machraziva amri, that they would announce hanishtara knoisa the mishtaka b'shuka, if a shtara knos found in the street, nedrena l'marayu, it should be returned to the malva. I saw a very interesting vort. We know that Rav Nachman was the son-in-law of the Reish Galusa. He was the son-in-law of the most prominent Talmud Chochem. Yet we see that Rav Nachman himself came from a humble background. In those days, a sofer was not considered a very prestigious position. So we see that when they looked for a son-in-law, they looked for a great individual and not focused on his family. Amar Rav Amram, says the Gemara further, Afanan Namitanina, so too we learnt in the Mishnah. Kol Ma'ase Bezdin, if we find a Ma'ase Bezdin in the street, Harei Zayachser, we return it to the Malva. Alma, the Cheshin L'Proin, that we're not concerned that perhaps the Loiva had already paid the Malva. Amalei Reb Zera, so Reb Zera said to Reb Amram, your Mishnah is not a proof to Shmuel's Psak, because Masnison is referring to Shtori Chaltosa Vadrachta. When the court collects property of a Baal Choyv in payment of the obligation and gives it to the Baal Choyv, the court writes a certificate of foreclosure for the creditor to serve as proof that he legally possessed the land. That's called a drachta. And a chaltoso is when a note is presented by a creditor for payment. The debtor says that he never borrowed, and he says that the signature of the witnesses on the shtar of all force. The creditor cannot collect unless he can prove to the court that the signatures are real. When he succeeds, the court puts on the document a paragraph attesting to the authenticity of the signatures, and they put their name below. And when they put their name below, that's called a hempik. Afterwards, they make a chaltoso. They act. That's called an act of court, which are not b'nei peroninu. Omer Rava, it's difficult to understand what you just said. V'olav b'nei peroninu, are these not considered b'nei peron? V'amin ador shuma hoda atasi yechishata. Seized property can be returned to the debtor if he offers money up to 12 months after its collection. V'amin meima, anom ador ano, v'sril edo shuma hoda loylam. That the debtor could claim back his property forever. Ella Amarova. So, since we see that they returned, obviously, the debt can be paid even after the creditor receives a certificate of foreclosure. So we should be concerned even by a certificate of foreclosure for Peron. Ella Amarova, Hasa Minor Tama. Dami Ihu the Absida Navshi. If the debtor goes and pays the Baal Choyv and takes back the property, he is the one that made himself, that should have demanded that dracht, the chaltosa and drachta back. The be'idin the pari, when he pays his Baal Choyv and gets the property back, he should have ripped up the chaltosa and drachta. Inami, or l'michtav shtar achrinalai, he should write another document. The Medina, continues the Gemara, Araboy Lamahedr. The Baal Choyv really doesn't have to return the property. It's only Mesum Hayisisa Yoshva Toy Ben Hashem, the Hoda Amra Bon and the Heather. Because a person should do what's right. This property really belonged to me. I couldn't pay up my Choyv, so they foreclosed on it, but the Sisa Vayoshva Toyv says that I should get back the property. And as the Mefarshim explained, the Sisa Yoshva Toyv is a pasuk in the Torah. Why is it called a Durabonon? So Mefarshim explained, certain psukim in the Torah are left specifically ambiguous, that the Torah left it up to the Rabbanon to define how they ought to be applied. This is such a situation. Hilchach Mereshu Kozovin, the Baal Choyv, the person who owed the money, now is buying the property, and the Baal Leila Mechtav Shtar Zvini should write a new document to cancel the Drachta and the Chatosa. So ask the Gemara, but however, points out the Gemara, that's by a chatos and a drachta. What can you say about every shtar choiv? In Isa the Pare, if I indeed paid up the shtar choiv, the shtar should have been written up. Amar, are you going to say it should be written up? Ripped up? Yes, I paid off my choiv, but the malva says, he delays me. I pay up my money, I want the shtar back, and the malva says, I'll give it to you tomorrow. The hashtag lesser goodbye. I'm not carrying it with me now when you pay me up. Inami Uri says, the halach is that the loiv is supposed to pay for the writing of the shtar. But sometimes the loiv can't even afford that. So what happens is the malva lays out the money. So the malva says, I'm holding up the shtar until you pay me back for the money that I laid out to pay for the cipher. Therefore, just because we find such a shtar in the street, even if it has a hempik, it is no proof that the debt is still owed, and the halacha is not like what Shmuel said, that the shtar should be returned to the malva.